822. The Steve that I'm talking to is Steve Frattini, interim mayor of Herron this morning. First off, Steve, it's good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
You know, I was curious. Last week when the governor had his State of the Budget address and he talked about the reimbursement rates, the money distributed to small towns, or any town as far as that part's concerned, and the cut there, $600 million?
Something right in that neighborhood.
And my first thought is, you know, that there's a lot of communities, but some communities live on thinner margins than others, too.
Absolutely, and particularly in some of the smaller communities that don't have the retail trade and other opportunities for outside income, whether it be motor fuel tax dollars, people stopping and getting gas. It's really a greater impact on those, and it's going to be a real challenge.
But see, here's the thing that I don't like. About this. The town collects the money, town collects the taxes, the businesses in the town collect the taxes, more accurately, right?
Right.
Send it to Springfield and they say, we're keeping it. Well, it's our money, we collected it. I mean, you were supposed to be reimbursed. That part to me is awkward and...
It's beyond awkward and it's just flat not appropriate because it is our money locally and it's a matter of we have our own issues to deal with. Of course, the state does too. But we are the income generator, so where we have to sort of pare our budgets down and try to live within means, then it would be nice to have that move on up the line and same type of activities take place.
How long have you been on the finance committee?
A little over a year, almost 2 years.
I read something on the internet that said the finance committee had not met until you took over as head of the finance committee for like 20 years. Did I read that correctly?
Speaking with some of the councilman had been there for quite some time. When this came about, that's what they had indicated. They'd been on that committee, and they could not remember in one instance, you know, where they'd been on that committee for almost 20 years.
What was the idea behind the finance committee? What was it meant to do?
The finance committee is really supposed to be instrumental in deriving the budget for the city and overseeing the expenditures of the city.
And so the city council had been doing that as a whole, I guess?
Well, actually, most of the work being done by staff, and it would be presented to the council once all the pairing had been done, and in their opinion, you know, where things needed to be, the council review it. And because of the nature of how the council is structured, and everyone's part-time, you know, so many hours a week that you can devote to so many different topics, I guess we relied on staff to do the real legwork and not taking as close a look at things as perhaps we should have.
Well, one of the items that, you know, that I noticed was you had been asked a question online about what would be the first thing, and I thought it was a great answer, by the way, what would be the first thing that you did if you were elected mayor? And I thought your answer was I really liked it.
Well, the first thing's already taken place.
Because you're already mayor.
Right. That's a part of it. But really the first activities are many things involved because there's no one single topic that you can go in and say, okay, we're going to do this as the starting point. It really has to be a multi-pronged approach. Everything from finance to vendor contracts to state fundings, grants, and just so many different things involved. And they all have a weighted value, of course, but still, you can't just sort of set one side and let it simmer while you focus on one particular topic. So it's a multitude of things, and it's basically where you have to do them collectively, and so many of them do intertwine, that the real first step is having the courage to go in there and attack the problems.
And sometimes turn over rocks.
Well, sometimes you do turn over rocks.
There's always a surprise, it seems like, doesn't it?
That's one of the joys of being in this role, is each day is full of new opportunities to solve problems.
Right. You know, when we started this conversation about the reimbursement state for the local government reimbursement, but some towns live on smaller margins than others. Well, last time you and I spoke, we talked a little bit about economic development. I think when you look at this cut in state funding to small communities, you realize that every single small business, every single job, anything that adds to your tax base is important.
Absolutely. And quite often we go out looking for that big employer, someone who's going to come in and create 50, 100, 200 jobs and so forth like that. And really, the smaller business is what drives the country. And I would be much more comfortable having 10 employers employing 10 people each than one that employs 100.
All of them hopefully doing something different, right. You know?
And that way, if there is a stumbling block along the way, you're not losing your whole base. Whereas with a larger company, depending on the industry they're in, something goes south on that one, then you've lost a big chunk. But you're basically spreading your risk, and if you want to look at it that way, by having the multiples of the smaller companies, and that's really what drives the country and the economy.
I wonder sometimes if you took Heron and you transplanted it to southern Indiana, what shape would Heron be in? I mean, Illinois has a tough time of it. We're looked with suspicion by businesses that would want to move here because they're thinking, you know, they've got this pension problem and they're going to take it out of somebody's hide and it might be mine. I mean, do you run into that as you're seeking businesses to come here? Now, there are some places, you know, whether it's if you're a food restaurant, there's always people going to eat. You know you're going to be able to do business. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're open a new Mexican restaurant, whatever it is, a corporate location. But I was wondering, if you took Heron and you transplanted it to another state, I mean, would people suddenly decide that they want to open up a business in Heron?
I think that there's some definite differences in the two locales or two states. One of the big things that plagues us here is in our workman comp situation. Very, very high claims rate, very high premiums as a result, and that is a big one. And how we've managed through the years in terms of just our overall fiscal responsibility at the state level definitely is not an attraction for us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, take a look at this. Your number one employer, I'm taking a leap here in what I've known in the past, number one employer in Heron is the hospital.
That's true.
Right? And by a pretty good leap, right? Well, whenever your hospital says, oh, gee whiz, look what the governor's address about Medicaid cuts, reimbursement rates dropping. See, anything that threatens my number one employer, and it's not just them, it's every hospital, always gives me reason for concern.
Well, absolutely it does. And they are our largest employer, and if there's a change in Medicare reimbursements or a slowdown and so forth, that certainly impacts them and their cash flow and their ability to meet and service the needs of the people. And that can be said, you know, for other industries as well. If there's one little glitch in the wheel there, then things sort of slow down or skip a beat, and then all of a sudden you're not where you'd like to be.
But there's always this other element about Heron, and it seems like the level of enthusiasm and entrepreneurial spirit in Heron is what has preserved it in its toughest times.
There is an absolute spirit of continuing forward and moving in right directions, and not only in business but in some of our social organizations, fraternal organizations, the spirit there. My wife and I were recently with the Coaches Association, the Heron Tiger Football Coaches Association. Some of the old coaches got some of the guys together and just began a charitable organization. Started off as just for scholarship purposes, but they've expanded and onto various other charities in the community helping out. And there's that spirit of friendliness, helping one another, that Heron is, I think, very unique in that way.
It's interesting because you can take a look, like the bocce court, get that right. It started as a little thing, it grew into a bigger thing, and then it grew into an even bigger thing. A Heron Festa Italiana started as one thing, continues to grow, because, see, many communities have these festivals, and they go and they have a story arc, and they last for 4 or 5 years, and then suddenly the interest, the volunteers drop off. Mm-hmm. Whereas to be able to continue to grow something for years takes a lot of effort, because at a certain point you think, you know, I'd just rather spend more time at home mowing my yard and spend it with my kids and grandkids or whatever the case. And you see a changing of the guard usually. And sometimes that means the demise of something. I've noticed, Heron, you really don't see that.
No, and again, I think Heron's unique in many ways, but part of that growth you're talking about, Tom, is it passes down through the generations, through the family, the closeness of the community, the various interactions in the community. You won't find one community leader in a, say, a social or fraternal organization that that's the only thing they do. They're going to be in multiple events, multiple activities, and they all sort of put together like a pieces of a puzzle. One sort of supports the other, and as a result, you know, they don't die off. They continue to go, and that puzzle keeps getting larger and with more distinctive characteristics and looks better.
You know, and it's kind of an ineffable quality. You don't really know what it means to market your community like that. I mean, it's so hard to count.
Well, it's an intangible.
It is.
You really can't put a quantitative measurement on in that way. But
we know it. People say our name. People say I was in Heron this weekend. They hear the radio ads. They hear about the bands that are playing there. They find out who's going to, you know, there's going to be this or that tournament, so and so. You know, it markets the community because Heron could have very easily been in this last economic downturn, one of the cities that withered. And I've never gotten a sense of that. That even during the darkest times, it's going like, what can we do to make this downtown look better? There's always that, instead of throwing your hands up and going, oh, well, we're done. We're done now. I've never gotten that impression.
No, and to that particular point, right now there's quite a bit of activity towards our downtown beautification and helping make things look better and to make things better for the merchants that we now have. There's going to be some plantscape work done on our main street. Hopefully, we're going to get the first phase.
Well, you had a committee that had got together on that,
absolutely.
So they're getting ready to implement now, huh?
It's that committee's growing every day. We've got folks who just have an interest in, say, flowers, and we have people who are interested in lighting the architecture that we have at nighttime and different things, different people with different interests. And they're all coming together, no one from any one particular segment of the community, but it's being spearheaded by some folks who really have a passion for our community and how it looks and how we present ourselves to others, and it's growing each time we meet.
But of all the things that undermine the ability and attempts at other people, it's this constant, ongoing crime issue and people's view towards it, whether it's perception or reality. It's one of the things, I think, the biggest thing that you've got to struggle with right now, isn't it, Steve?
Well, it's a challenge, and actually some of our numbers are down from the previous year already in terms of the things that we hear more about, the home invasions or the burglaries.
Which are the home invasions are the thing I hear most. I mean, when I've got a guy who says, look, I'm telling you, I've got a source that says a woman was held hostage in her home, and they were searching for pharmaceutical drugs. You know, I mean, I'm getting these on a regular basis, Steve.
There has been a wave, but this is cyclic too, Tom, a bit cyclic. And the good news is that we've made some key arrests just in recent days and some more coming in the hours.
I think one of the guys that was apprehended in Murfreesboro last week had been tied into a number of residential burglaries in Heron.
Absolutely. And as it turned out, you know, we knew or had a good idea who we were looking for and so forth, and could not find him around town. And then he decided to become more active in Murfreesboro and helped us out on that. So we are making some real progress in those areas. And it's a cyclic thing, like I say. You know, you'll have a year or two. A few years ago, we had another pretty good rash about 3 years ago going on. And we were fortunate in being able to solve some of those and moving on. But then it seems like for every person that we take in and off the streets like that, there's three that come down the highway and decide to stop off for a while and what have you like that. Another thing is that probably we are magnifying those issues more than we would have in past years just through social media. It's having a real impact there. Well, I heard this, and
echo
by
chamber.
The time it gets five people down, you know, it's another Charles Manson situation.
Right.
So there's a lot of amplification there that is
I don't think
unfounded.
I don't think we've become accustomed to how social media works and affects us and how a message can be magnified, the optics of a situation, the way it's presented. I don't think we're used to it yet. I don't think we've learned everything from it. But on the other hand, I mean, I was watching the Heron Crime Watch Facebook page location last week, and a guy goes on and says, there's somebody in my apartment building who is selling meth and crack and drugs, and we're close to the high school. Will anybody help me? So I called the Southern Illinois Enforcement Group, the undercover agent that I know there, and said, won't you go take a look at this post now? And he says, we're going to get right on it right now. Right. So, I mean, you do have people that are willing to say, this is going on, that's who's doing it, which is crucial to success.
And we have had successes in that area. If you recall, several weeks ago, where we had the basically the Williamson County Roundup for the number of indictments from Marion, Heron, and so forth.
19 people, I think?
19 altogether. And just about all of them are in custody at this time. And Heron was not a part of the Southern Illinois Enforcement Group for a period of time. We would give money only, but we do have an officer assigned back to that unit, which helps bring more focus to our community because we have a person in there. And we're starting to see some of the benefits of that now. It's nothing overnight, but the group has been very active and remains so.
You know what I find interesting about this? That you can have a person, and it's mentioned on social media, and then TV reports, and then newspaper reports, and the radio reports it, and then, right, and the echo chamber effect you were alluding to a couple of moments ago. And so you expect something big, and it's usually like one guy who has hundreds of people upset. It's like one guy, maybe two, he's got an accomplice. It's amazing what kind of damage can be done to the image of a community by one criminal that's not been caught.
The impact is right there. And again, social media has really helped amplify that. And just like the one you mentioned a moment ago, and I read the same thing, well, this is going on in my apartment building. Well, who do I call? Well, think a minute. Who would you call?
Right.
You know, who takes care of those matters? It's not your colleagues in the social media. It's law enforcement.
Right.
If you have this type of information, we will respond to it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And by being the eyes and ears of the community in that manner certainly helps. Discussing it among yourselves and kibitzing about it, really there's no value in that. Let's get the information to where it needs to be, and let us work with that.
Let's deal with it. Steve Frattini, interim mayor. And hope we get another opportunity to talk to you before the upcoming election, too.
Well, we'd love to be able to do that.
You know, and then talk more about the future. Because that is, you know, I've got two, I get on kicks for a while, Steve. One of them is the future right now. The other one that my own personal kick that I get on, I kind of do a little more research on, is morale. I mean, when you and I were off the mic, and before when you came in, I said, so how's things going? He said, and Steve, first thing he said, looked me in the eye, says, it's another day for opportunity. It's another day for us to get things better and go. See, and morale is one of the most important things. It's another one of those things that you and I talked about earlier. You can't really qualify it. You can't say it's morale is a 10 today. You don't know it, but it contributes to your community. It's the way people think about themselves, and it's one of those things that you've got to preserve as a leader.
Well, absolutely, and the old adage about, well, let's take lemons and make lemonade. I prefer taking lemons and making a lemon meringue pie.
So, lemonade's just not good enough.
No, it absolutely isn't. And we do have challenges, but how we deal with those and move forward, that's really where the key is and where the focus needs to be. And we have a number of opportunities, Tom.